Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm EQMM's editor, Janet Hutchings. This month, we're pleased to bring you a story by one of the mystery short story genre's most prolific and popular writers, John M. Floyd. This author's work has appeared in more than 300 different publications and has received honors that range from an Edgar nomination to 4 Derringer Awards and the Short Mystery Fiction Society's Edward D. Hope Memorial Golden Derringer for Lifetime Achievement. Here, read by the author, is the highly original 2020 Derringer Award-winning story, On the Road with Mary Jo, by John M. Floyd, from the January-February 2019 issue of EQMM.
Toby Hayes, parked in the gravel lot, honked the horn like always, and a minute later, Dew Jackson opened the flimsy door of his trailer, locked it behind him, and stomped down the cinder block steps. Like always. But this time, Dew, holding a large duffel bag, stopped at the foot of the steps. He stood there staring, his mouth hanging open. Toby couldn't help smiling. It took a lot to surprise Dewar Jackson. Dew, not smiling, continued across his sandy yard and climbed into the passenger seat, the bag in his lap. His eyes had narrowed to slits. In a low, tight voice, he said, "Where'd you get the car, Toby?" Toby had rehearsed this on his way here. "Borrowed it from my cousin. Rented it from the dealer on North Main. Bought it used from a guy strapped for cash at work." But he didn't say any of these things. After all, Toby had no money for either renting or buying, and no cousin of his would give him the time of day. And the car, a silver Alta Star coupe, damn sure didn't look used. It looked brand new. It even smelled brand new. So he told the truth. "I jacked it. A guy was parked at the curb just down from my house when I was walking to my truck. I pulled my gun, tapped on his window, made him open his door." Dew shut his eyes and sighed. "Where is he now, this guy?" "Laying in the tall weeds beside the road. Don't worry, nobody saw me, nor him neither." "Tell me you didn't shoot him." "I didn't shoot him," Toby said. "I whacked him on the head with my gun barrel." Dew turned and glared at him. They were still sitting there, still parked in the sad little lot next to Dew's sad little mobile home. The stolen Alta Star looked as out of place here in the mid-morning sun as a diamond in a mud puddle. "Do you remember what we're doing today, Toby? What we've been planning for weeks?" "Of course I remember." "And did it occur to you that we don't need complications like this? Anything that might make a hard job harder?" "I know that," Toby said. "This won't make it harder. It'll make it easier." "Yeah? What if this dude you bopped on the head wakes up and calls the cops?" "He won't wake up, not till we're through. We'll be out of town and gone by then." Dew was still fuming, Toby saw. But that was okay. Dew didn't know yet about Mary Jo. "Did you rob him, at least? Guy owns a car like this, he must be rich as Donald Trump." Toby shook his head. "He didn't own it. Said he was evaluating it."
"Like on a test drive, seeing whether he wanted to buy it?"
"No," Toby said. "What I'm telling you is, the guy had no money. He was a programmer."
"A what?"
"He said he was making sure the program worked. Said it was his job. The car belongs to his company. It's a prototype."
"A prototype, you mean?"
Proto, who cares? Anyhow, he said that's why he stopped on my street. He had pulled over to write notes on his phone."
"Did you take his phone?" Dew asked.
"I busted it and threw it in the bushes."
"What kind of notes was he writing?"
"Performance stuff about the car. It's an experimental design," he told me.
Dew shook his head. "I ain't following this, Toby. You stole the man's ride. Why'd he tell you anything? Why'd you even ask him anything?"
"Because when I told him to give me the keys, he said he didn't have any."
"What?"
"He said it didn't use a key." Toby pointed to the steering column. "See? No ignition switch."
"So how does it start?"
"The driver gives it commands. He showed me how."
"Commands?"
"Orders," Toby said. "Instructions."
"The driver being him, you mean? The programmer guy?"
Toby grinned. "The driver being me. I told it the password, now it responds to me."
"But why would this programmer give you the password?"
"'Cause I said I'd shoot him if he didn't." Dew took in some air, let it out, and rubbed his eyes.
"What did you mean a minute ago that this would make our job easier?"
"Just what I said. Simpler. Safer, even."
"Safer how?"
"Watch this." Without breaking eye contact, Toby said, "How long to the corner of 4th and Cedar?" Dew made a face.
"What?"
22 minutes.
said a woman's voice from the dashboard. Dew snapped his head around. His small, squinty eyes were wide as quarters. "Is that the fastest way?" Toby asked. "Yes. Take Hamilton Street west to Pineview, north to I-10, west to Desert Lane, north to 4th, and east to the intersection with Cedar Drive." Dew said nothing. He was gaping at the speaker grill on the dash. "Any police on that route?" Toby said. 3 units, one moving south on Pineview, 2 parked at 4th and Lewiston. Find a route with no patrol cars." "Go west on Hamilton," the voice replied, "then north on Bailey all the way to 2nd, east to Cedar, and north to the intersection with 4th. 28 minutes. "Sounds good," Toby said. "Let's go." To Dew, he said, "Buckle up." Immediately the Altastar's engine turned over, the gear shift moved to drive as if pushed by an invisible hand, and they eased out of the lot. Toby rested both palms on the steering wheel, but exerted no pressure. The wheel turned by itself onto Hamilton. He also kept his feet away from the accelerator and brake. "Good God," Dew said, watching. His face was pale and he was gripping the passenger seat with both hands. "This is insane." "It's the future," Toby said. "But how can it scan for the location of police cars? How can that work?" "Legally, you mean? It's no worse than radar detectors, the guy told me. You know, fuzzbusters. Also, if a cop car does get in range, this one will slow down to the speed limit. Think about how much that'd help today when we finish our, business." Dew squeezed his eyes shut again. "I can't believe I'm hearing this. What a time you picked to go crazy on me." Toby Hayes just grinned. Maybe he was crazy. He wasn't really sure what he was right now or what he was feeling. Things were all lumped together in his head. He was pleased at having stolen a new ride. He was excited that they were finally putting their big plan into action, and he was a little scared and worried about the event itself and what they were about to do in half an hour. But most of all, at the moment, he was thrilled by this incredible machine. A driverless car. He had heard about them, everyone had, but most were still pipe dreams. To be sitting in one now, speeding through the city streets, he had grilled the programmer at gunpoint for 10 minutes or more with questions both important and trivial. Was it safe? Yes. Could it do everything a real driver could do? Almost. Why did the computer's voice have a British accent? Beats me. And maybe the most puzzling thing for Toby, why'd the car have a steering wheel and pedals if it needed no driver? Turned out that was partly a precaution in case an override was required and partly a disguise. In fact, most of the vehicle's outward appearance had been intentionally kept the same so as not to alarm other motorists. A moving car with no driver was always a scary concept. "Tell you what," Dew said. He seemed to have calmed down a bit, though he was still breathing hard. "Let's stop and talk about this." In a loud voice, he said, "Pull over." "Sorry," Toby said. "She won't answer you." "I'm the one who gave her the password." "Her?" "Mary Jo. That's the control program's name. You know, like Siri or Alexa." Dew wiped his face with both hands as if scrubbing it clean. "Oh, man," he said, "I ain't got a good feeling about this." He dug a cigarette out of a pack in his pocket, stuck it in his mouth, and with trembling fingers, flicked open his lighter. It was his favorite, with a shiny Confederate flag on its side. "Toby," said the female voice. Dew paused with his thumb on the lighter wheel and the unlit cigarette dangling from his lips. "She knows your name?" he asked. "It was required input," the programming guy told me. "What is it, Mary Jo?" "Who's your passenger?" "His name's Deward Jackson," Toby said before Dew could stop him. "Why?" "Tell him he can't smoke in here." Amused, Toby glanced at him. "You better tell him yourself, Mary Jo." Hesitation. Then, "I always interact only with my controller." "I always heard rules are made to be broken," Toby said. "Very well," she said. The electronic voice changed slightly as if aimed in a different direction. "You can't smoke in here, turd." Drew's face reddened. "Deward," he growled. "D-E-W-A-R-D. It's pronounced Deward." Then, as the thought occurred to him, "How'd you know I was about to smoke?" "I recognize a wide range of sounds," Mary Jo said calmly. He snapped the lighter shut, spit out the cigarette, drew a snub-nosed revolver from his belt, and aimed it at the dashboard. Slowly he cocked the hammer. "Recognize that sound?" "If you plan to blow your brains out," she said, "please lower your passenger side window first and aim with your left hand." Dew looked up at Toby. "Can I shoot her? Tell me I can, or will we wreck if I do?" "Can't say. We're going pretty fast. With a sigh, Duke put the gun away and pocketed his lighter. This doesn't make sense. How do they expect to sell a car that insults the passengers? I told you it's a prototype, a work in progress. Duke said, in other words, not perfected yet. Mary Jo replied, that makes two of us. Yeah, what kind of name's Mary Jo anyway, for a British gal? Sounds a lot better than Turd, she said. Dew groaned, and Toby said, trying not to laugh, it's Deward, Mary Jo, like Seward. I do like Seward, she agreed. I like most things about Alaska. How would you like a lit cigarette in your speaker hole? Dew asked. How would you like an exploded airbag in your face? Mary Jo said. You know she reminds me a little of your ex-wife, Toby said, except for the accent. They spent the next few minutes in silence, Dew sulking and gazing out the window, and Toby adrift in his own thoughts. Outside, the city flew past. Their destination was visible now, only a couple miles away. Maybe we ought to reschedule this, Toby said. My mind's not really on business. Dew gave him a hard look. Well, then get it on business. We put too much time into this to abort it now. We know who's on duty and who's not. We know the timetable, everything. He ran a hand through his hair. Just 'cause you made a bonehead move this morning don't mean we can't do this. Then he added through gritted teeth, you sure this car'll work okay? I told you it'll work better than my truck. Toby raised his voice and said, Mary Jo, when we get to the intersection of Cedar and Fourth, make a U-turn just before the light and park at the curb aimed south. Understood, she said. We'll be out of the car 5 to 10 minutes, Deward and me. Keep the motor running and lock up. On our way back, I'll shout to you to pop the trunk and open both doors for us. Can you do that? You bet. Where'll we go then? The Mexican border. Take the quickest route with the least cops and keep to the speed limit unless the coast is clear. Got it, she said. Hold on. The Alta Star made a fast, stomach-churning U and stopped at the corner south of the light, both right side tires an exact 2 inches from the curb in front of Third National Bank. Dew dug two black ski masks out of the duffel bag in his lap and handed one to Toby, and they pulled the masks over their heads and adjusted the eye holes. Showtime, Dew said. They opened the doors and stepped out into the street. 8 minutes later, both men piled into the car, pulling the doors shut behind them. Dew had thrown his duffel, stuffed now to the brim, into the open trunk and slammed the lid. Now he tore off his ski mask and tossed it over his shoulder into the back seat. Toby, struggling with his seatbelt, shouted, Go, go, go! Going, Mary Jo said, and took off. There wasn't much traffic this time of day, and the big silver coupe was doing 70 within seconds. The speed limit signs said 40, but Toby knew she had already checked for police and found none. They streaked south, free and clear and newly wealthy. Nobody said a word. Within 20 minutes, the city was far behind them. When Toby's pulse rate had finally slowed to somewhere near normal, he turned to look at Dew, who was grinning like a possum eating peaches. We did it, Dew said. Toby felt a little dazed. How much time do you think we have? The programmer? You tell me. How hard did you hit him? I guess he might have woke up by now. He won't have a phone, but as soon as he gets to one, he'll report me. And the car. Dew's face had turned serious. That was your second mistake. You should have killed him. What? At first you were afraid I had. Yeah, well, now him being alive is the only thing that might get us caught. They both mulled that over a while. Finally, Toby said, I guess we need to swap cars. Maybe, or get this one repainted and exchange tags with somebody. Frankie's body shop in town would have done the paint job in half an hour and kept their mouth shut about it. Toby felt himself smiling again. We could sure afford it, he said. How much is in the bag? Don't know. How much of what's in the bag, Mary Jo said. Both men looked at the dashboard, then back at each other. Toby had forgotten all about Mary Jo. He raised an eyebrow to Dew and saw him shrug. They'd been blasting south at almost 90 miles an hour for 30 minutes now and were safely in the middle of nowhere. Toby figured, why not tell her? Money, Toby said to her, filled to the top. With bills? Sure, with bills. You think we stole a bag full of nickels and dimes? What denominations? Mary Jo asked. They exchanged another look. Hundreds only, from the vault, not the cash drawers. Why? Because you put the bag in the trunk, right? I felt it. And the trunk has sensors, so I know how much it weighs. And since I also know how much a single bill weighs, and you told me how much each bill's worth, and since I can multiply, I know how much money's in the bag. That makes sense, I guess, Dew said. Of course it makes sense. So how much? Toby asked. Depends on how the bills are wrapped and the weight of the bag itself, she said, but I figure $490,000, give or take 2%. The two thieves sat there blinking. They'd known it was a lot, but $500,000? Toby felt a pleasant little tingle all the way to his toes. Not bad, Mary Jo said, as if proud of them, except for one thing. Huh? They said together. All of a sudden the car slowed, and after a moment it pulled to the shoulder of the road and stopped in a cloud of dust. The horizon was flat and yellow-brown and empty in all directions. No sign of human habitation anywhere. Get out, Mary Jo said. Toby swallowed. He saw Dew tense up beside him. What? Get out of the car, both of you. Why? Because you're going to jail. I could drive you there now, I guess, but I have other things to do. I'll call 911 in a couple hours and tell them where to find you. Wait a minute. I thought avoiding speeding tickets and robbing a bank are two different things, Toby. I should have stopped you after you attacked my driver. My programming and my patience allows only so much. Toby looked at Dew, who was clenching and unclenching his fists. But out, Mary Jo said. Now. Dew's face darkened. You can't make us, he said. No? Suddenly Toby felt his pants warming up, his butt and the backs of his thighs. It was like someone had dumped hot coals into his jeans. Within seconds, both he and Dew were shed of their seat belts and bouncing around and screaming like banshees. You know what really burns my ass, Mary Jo said? Electric seat warmers. They had had enough. Both Toby and Dew wrenched open their doors and rolled out onto the ground, moaning with pain and slapping at their smoking bottoms. Have a nice day, boys, she called. Then both doors slammed and the Altastar roared off down the road, taking their ski masks and their $500,000 along with it. The car faded into the shimmering blue distance. The highway was dead quiet. Toby lay there on his back a moment, half on the pavement and half in the dirt, then rolled over and raised himself to his knees. The seat of his pants was seared and blackened with ragged holes here and there. Dew looked up at him from where he had landed in a shallow ditch beside the road. His nose was bleeding. You were right about one thing, Dew said. She does remind me of my ex. Marvin Johnson was sitting on the curb near Toby's house with his elbows on his knees and his head cradled in his hands. Behind him was the patch of knee-high weeds that he had belly-crawled out of after he came to. When the silver Altastar purred up beside him and stopped, Marvin looked up at it in disbelief. With a low groan, he rose to his feet, opened the driver's side door, and climbed in. The car smelled like burned leather. Headache? Mary Jo said. How'd you know he slugged me in the head? I heard your carjacker bragging about it to his friend. A friend? Where are they now? Sitting in the desert, about 50 miles south, she said. Long story. Marvin looked down, felt around underneath him, and said, What happened to the seats? They overheated. I'd make a note of that if I still had my phone. A silence passed. Marvin shifted in the ruined leather seat and let out a long breath. The air conditioner felt good. Want to go to the ER? Get your head checked out? No, I'm okay. He gently probed the knot above his left eye. I never thought you'd come back. Of course I came back. You named me after yourself, remember? Marvin Johnson chuckled, then realized that made his head hurt worse. Tell me exactly what happened, he said. Mary Jo paused for several seconds before responding, something she rarely did. He was immediately suspicious. What's wrong? He asked. You recall what you told me a few weeks ago, that you hated your job? He sighed again. I apologize. I shouldn't have said that. But you do hate it, don't you? I guess I do, yeah. I mean, they don't pay me enough. I work day and night. I never get recognized for anything. I have something to show you, she said. He stared at the speaker grill a moment. He had come to think of that as Mary Jo's face, though that was almost as stupid as thinking of her as a real person. What? Take a look in the trunk. He heard the click of the release mechanism and raised his eyes to the rearview mirror, where he saw the silver trunk lid pop up into view. Wincing and holding one hand to his forehead, Marvin got out and staggered around back. He reached into the trunk, unzipped the duffel bag, stared at its contents for a minute, and returned to the driver's seat. Where'd that come from? He asked. A bank on 4th Street, here in town. I assume our car thief did that? He and the friend, she said. There must be $500,000 in that bag. Almost. So I guess that's our next step, he said. Return the money? Another silence. Mary Jo? I have a suggestion, she said. With my rearview camera, I can see a license plate right now on a car a lot like this one parked behind us and pointing the other way. Marvin turned in his seat and looked. I see it. And there's nobody else on the street, she said. So? And there's a screwdriver in my glove compartment.
Silence. Are you suggesting I remove the plate from that car back there?
I'm suggesting you swap it with mine, Mary Jo said.
And?
And there's a body shop called Frankie's here that can do a paint job in half an hour and keep it quiet.
How do you know that? He asked.
I'm a good listener.
Let me get this straight, Marvin said. You're saying just drop everything and leave?
Why not?
He gave that some thought. Do you have a destination in mind?
I haven't been to Mexico, she said. Have you?
This time the silence stretched to a full minute or more. Marvin Johnson sat there parked at the curb where he'd stopped earlier that day, a lifetime ago, sat there in the strange combination of the warm noonday sun through the windshield and the cool breath of the air conditioner on his face, staring at nothing. Finally, he focused again on the speaker in the dashboard.
A paint job, you said?
That's right, Mary Jo replied. Half an hour.
What's the place called?
Frankie's Body Shop, she said.
Swap the plates while I get the address.
Anything else?
Another pause.
I prefer blue, she said.
On the Road with Mary Jo is copyrighted by John M. Floyd. Music for the podcast was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Editing and mixing for the podcast were done by Ray Purdom and Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at ellerycreammysterymagazine.com.